Hello, this is the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service, with reports and analysis from across the world. The latest news 7 days a week. BBC World Service podcasts are supported by advertising.
This podcast is brought to you by Uma. If you're a small business owner, now more than ever, you understand the importance of being able to adapt so you can always be there for your customers. Uma Office is a cloud-based business phone service that gives small business owners the flexibility needed to run a business efficiently from anywhere. With features like mobile and desktop apps, a virtual receptionist, and call recording, you can do more for less. Uma Office starts at $19.95 per user per month with no contracts. To learn more, go to uma.com or call 833-TRY-OOMA.
This is a Global News podcast from the BBC World Service. I'm Jeanette Jalil, and in the early hours of Saturday, the 11th of July, these are our main stories. Turkey's President Erdogan moves to turn the world-famous Hagia Sophia Museum in Istanbul into a mosque. As campaigning ends for Sunday's presidential runoff in Poland, what do young people want? And deforestation in the Amazon region hits a record high. Also in this podcast, as Europe opens to tourists again, museums, such as the ones at the Vatican, are eager for visitors to return.
Mi sento di dire a tutti.
Let me tell everyone, we're waiting for you with open arms. We guarantee that you will be able to visit this museum in perfect safety.
And in your face, anger in the UK over the continued ban on eyebrow threading and other facial treatments, while trimming beards will be allowed from Monday. It was once the greatest cathedral in Christendom, but the Hagia Sophia in Istanbul is now a mosque.
Ya Allah! Bismillah! Allahu Ekber! Ya Allah! Bismillah!
Supporters of Turkey's President Erdogan celebrated after a court ruled that the iconic building, revered by both Christians and Muslims, should no longer be considered a museum, but should revert to being a mosque, as it was in the days of the Ottoman Empire, when it acquired its famous minarets. Within minutes of the court ruling, President Erdogan signed a decree ordering the Hagia Sophia to be open for Muslim prayers in 2 weeks' time. But not everyone is celebrating. The Nobel Prize-winning writer Orhan Pamuk says the move marks the end of modern Turkish secularism.
Saint Sophia is a sign of modern Turkish Muslim secularism. Now, to convert it back into a mosque, into a regular mosque, is to say to the rest of the world, unfortunately, we don't want to be friendly with the West anymore. Unfortunately, we don't want to be that secular anymore.
I've been speaking to our correspondent in Istanbul, Orla Gerin.
There is deep symbolism to this change being made now. It is seen very much by many observers here as President Erdogan taking another step to recast and remake Turkey according to his vision, which is a religious conservative vision. Now, it will be a popular move with his supporters. It will be a popular move with Turkish nationalists. Many people here will say to you, look, Hagia Sophia is on Turkish soil, it's in Turkish hands, and it's up to Turks to decide what the status of this monument should be.
But President Erdogan's critics will say it's also a very welcome distraction for him at a time when his popularity is waning.
Absolutely, the timing is no accident. Certainly now, with the economic damage that has been done to Turkey during the COVID pandemic, and also with President Erdogan's popularity taking a hit, it's a very convenient moment to deliver something which will appeal very much to his base. There is strong opposition, which was voiced beforehand by, among others, the spiritual leader of the Orthodox Church worldwide, Patriarch Bartholomew. He pleaded for the status of Hagia Sophia to remain unchanged. He said that it belonged not only to Turkey, but that it belonged to all humanity.
So what next for the Hagia Sophia? Will it become a fully functioning mosque? And how will that fit in with its status as a World Heritage site and a magnet for tourists?
Currently, it is the number one tourist attraction in Turkey. When we were there just a few hours ago, there was just a trickle of visitors going in and out, of course, because of the COVID-19 pandemic. Tourist numbers here are down. But we did speak to one visitor from the UK who had just been inside with his teenage sons, and he said, look, it won't make any difference to me. I would want to come, whether it's a museum or a mosque, and I would urge anyone else to do so. The widespread expectation here is that perhaps during prayers, Christian icons like the golden mosaics on the ceiling would simply be covered up, and that they could then be uncovered at other times when visitors would still want to go inside and see the glorious architecture and to see the many layers of history inside the building.
Ola Guerin. Two contrasting visions for Poland's future are on the ballot in Sunday's presidential runoff. The incumbent, Andrzej Duda, is an ally of the nationalist, socially conservative Law and Justice government, and he supports its controversial reforms to the judiciary. His challenger, the mayor of Warsaw, Rafał Trzaskowski, espouses a more liberal, more pro-EU direction. Our correspondent Adam Easton has been talking to youth activists on both sides of Poland's political and cultural divide.
My name is Oliwia Bieńkowska and I'm 21 years old.
My name is Mateusz Onyszczuk and I'm 19 years old. I want to live in Poland when everybody can say what he wants and everybody have a respect for each other. Because if today, for example, LGBT people and immigrants are attacked by the government, the next day it could be you or me.
President Duda's brought this up in the campaign, as you know, talking about LGBT being an ideology which is essentially imported into Poland and is a threat to the traditional model of the family. Do you support gay marriage, for example, or the adoption of children by same-sex couples?
I personally do. I support both gay marriage and the adoption of children, honestly. That's my own personal opinion, of course, though I respect that some people might not have the same beliefs as I do, and it's perfectly fine.
What do you think about the changes that have been made by the governing camp to the judiciary?
I believe that this is all going towards this kind of autocratic state. It's more liberal in a way, but still they try to have as much influence as possible. It just kind of makes me feel uneasy about it.
What do you think about Europe and Poland's place in Europe?
Our government don't like European Union. Except the European money. He wants European money, not the European values. I like the European Union. We have open borders, no roaming.
And what would you say is the thing that most annoys you about the government at the moment?
Arrogance.
Some of that aggression is bubbling under the surface here in Wrocław, in southwestern Poland, where President Duda is about to speak at a campaign rally. Both supporters and opponents of the president are gathered here, separated by two lines of police officers. For his electorate, the president is the guardian of the government's popular welfare programs, such as the 500-plus child benefit payments, which have helped lift many Poles out of poverty.
So I'm Michał Szpondrowski, I'm 26, and basically I'm going on the campaign tour with the president, and I'm like the announcer of the rallies.
Tell me, why do you like President Duda?
Well, basically, he's a good guy. He is a very, you know, compassionate person. He feels the emotions of the people, and he basically fulfilled all of his major promises. This is lowering the retirement age. It's the 500-plus program.
What particular values does President Duda represent that you admire?
Well, you know, support for the family, both the financial status of the family, which has improved during the 5 years of his presidency, but also he values being a patriot. I mean, the love towards our country, towards our tradition.
What do you think about changes to the judiciary? And that's been seen as undermining the rule of law in Poland.
There is a dispute, and it is normal that our opponents try to say that there is no democracy because the judges are not free, but they can speak what they want, they can give the sentences however they want based on the law, so I don't think that there is any threat.
This election will shape Polish politics over the next 3 years. If President Duda is re-elected, the government can continue its reforms without hindrance. That may bring further problems with the EU. If his opponent, Rafał Trzaskowski, wins, he will be able to use the president's power to veto legislation to block some of those reforms, setting up a very stormy political future for the country.
That report by Adam Easton. Six journalists working for the broadcaster Al Jazeera are being investigated in Malaysia over a documentary about why the COVID-19 pandemic forced migrant workers into hiding. Al Jazeera has said it's deeply concerned for its staff. Our reporter Farhana Dawood told me more.
Well, this all relates to a 25-minute documentary called Locked Up in Malaysia's Lockdown. Now, that aired last week. The Malaysian authorities say that the documentary is misleading and unfair and inaccurate. The documentary highlighted the harsh treatment of migrant workers during the COVID-19 lockdown, in often in detention centres with handcuffs and other things. Al Jazeera did ask the Malaysian government for a response to the documentary as part of the process of doing the documentary, but the Malaysian government didn't respond to any interview requests. Now, these journalists were called in for questioning by police, and this is what the Inspector General of Police, Abdul Hamid Bador, had to say.
The Attorney General Department, after reviewing the documentary, has determined that there were elements that fall under the Sedition Act, the Penal Code, and the Communications and Multimedia Act.
And Farhana, tell us more about the journalists who've been questioned.
Well, five of them are indeed Australian, actually. Now, this documentary strand is a very well respected documentary strand that goes out on Al Jazeera. So the International Federation of Journalists and Australia's Media Entertainment Arts Alliance have both called on Malaysia to desist from intimidating journalists. They say journalism should not be a crime.
And what is media freedom like in Malaysia generally?
Since March this year, the International Federation of Journalists say there have been 19 incidents of harassment of media workers and intimidation. They say it's all gotten a lot worse since the new government took office in March. They say freedom of speech and the press is very much under threat.
Farhana Dawood. The Amazon is burning at a rate never seen before. Despite repeated criticism and warnings, the deforestation of the Brazilian Amazon has increased by a record 25% in the first half of this year. Environmentalists have reiterated their calls for President Jair Bolsonaro to abandon his plans to develop the region, whose inhabitants have also been hit hard by the coronavirus pandemic. Our Brazil correspondent, Katie Watson, told me how much damage has been done.
Yeah, we're talking more than 3,000 square kilometres, 1,200 square miles. I mean, a huge amount. It's also the 14th consecutive month that deforestation has risen. So this is going to put pressure on Jair Bolsonaro. He is a president who has made very clear that he wants to develop the Amazon. But of course, he is increasingly under scrutiny for the destruction of the rainforest under his leadership.
Any sign that he's responding to that pressure, though?
Well, actually, I mean, the fires last year that ravaged the Amazon, there is an expectation Brazil will ban fires in the forest for 120 days. There's been a lot of pressure from global investors. They wrote an open letter asking him to stop projects that would destroy the rainforest. But the concern is that despite these efforts, the military has also been sent in, there's an increase in deforestation. And that is the big concern, that really putting in these measures, what good does it do when we're seeing these figures keep going up and up?
And how much has the COVID-19 pandemic exacerbated this crisis in the Amazon?
Well, the concern is that there's not the oversight that there should be. Now, the oversight has obviously reduced as well under a leadership that's wanting to promote the Amazon as an economic source. But the fact is that because of regulations around protection of the Amazon, protection of indigenous communities, there's not as many people on the ground, and that means there's not as many people watching for any, you know, the illegal logging, mining and such like that we're seeing in the rainforest.
Katie Watson in Brazil. Still to come on this podcast, who will guard the guards? Nigeria's president sacks the head of the country's anti-corruption agency over accusations of theft. let's give you an update now on the Johnny Depp libel trial, where the actor has been giving evidence for a fourth and final day at the High Court in London. The Hollywood star gave his account of two rows with his ex-wife, Amber Heard, one of which took place on Ms. Heard's 30th birthday. Johnny Depp is suing the tabloid newspaper The Sun after it claimed he was a wife beater. Our entertainment correspondent Lisa Mazimba was in court.
Today's evidence focused on arguments the couple had towards the end of their relationship, including one after Johnny Depp arrived late for Miss Heard's 30th birthday party in April 2016. She said the actor threw a magnum of champagne at her. When it missed, she's claimed he grabbed her by the hair and pulled her down on the bed. He denied that. In another row a month later, Miss Heard has said the actor threw a phone at her, which hit her in the face. The court heard that one of her friends called the police, and a specialist domestic violence officer went to their apartment but found no sign of any injury. Details of Miss Heard's allegations of the sexual violence she claims to have suffered were also heard, but behind closed doors. Mr. Depp denies being violent to any woman.
Lisa Mazimba reporting. The president of Nigeria, Muhammadu Buhari, has suspended the head of the country's anti-corruption agency after he was accused of corruption himself. Ibrahim Magu is being investigated after allegations that he stole money that had been confiscated by the organisation. Ishak Khalid reports from Abuja.
A statement from Nigeria's justice minister says the suspension of the country's anti-corruption chief, Mr. Ibrahim Magu, is to allow for unhindered inquiry into his conduct. This is the first official confirmation of the suspension after days of rumours. The Nigerian government has not given details of the allegations against the suspended head of the anti-corruption body, the EFCC, but reports suggest he is being investigated for allegedly embezzling funds and assets recovered from corrupt officials. The Nigerian authorities had denied reports that he was arrested on Monday, saying he was only invited to appear before a presidential investigative panel for questioning. The EFCC Director of Operations, Mohammed Umar, has been asked to take charge, pending the outcome of the ongoing investigation into the conduct of the commission's boss. Mr. Ibrahim Magu became the acting head of the Economic and Financial Crimes Commission in 2015, when President Muhammadu Buhari came to power on a promise to tackle endemic corruption in the country. Under his leadership at the Anti-Graft Agency, a number of senior politicians, including several former powerful state governors, have been jailed, but there have been questions about the way his commission managed funds recovered from corrupt officials. Nigeria's Vice President Yemi Osinbajo has earlier this week denied reports that he also illegally benefited from the recovered wealth.
Ishak Khalid in Abuja. Many popular European destinations are crying out for tourists who haven't returned in large numbers despite the lifting of lockdowns across the continent. And that means there's an upside for those who do make the journey, a more exclusive sightseeing experience, as our correspondent Quentin Somerville found out on a trip to the Vatican.
I've just had my temperature taken. I have my face mask on here at security for the Vatican Museum. I'm all set. Normally, the queues stretch right around the Vatican City. You can probably hear from the echo that there's hardly anyone. They normally get about 7 million tourists a year. Well, they're getting a fraction of that at the moment because they're limiting the numbers who can come here because of COVID. There are times as a correspondent when you feel very inadequate, certainly your powers of description. And I feel like that right now. I'm in the map gallery of the Vatican, which was completed in the 16th century. All around me are these incredibly detailed, rich frescoes of Italy in gilt, and the floor is marble. It's breathtaking. But the other significant difference here now is there's breathing space. I'm wearing a mask, of course, but this gallery is far less crowded than it normally would be. This was one of the first museums, major museums in the world, to reopen. Before the pandemic, they saw about 4,000 visitors an hour. Now it's round about 400. Monsignor Paolo Nicolini says the Vatican is ready to welcome back Brits.
Mi sento di dire a tutti.
Let me tell everyone, and in particular those who come from the UK and from all countries in the world, we are waiting for you with open arms. We guarantee that you will be able to visit this museum in perfect safety, with no dangers involved. It's now up to you to be courageous and travel.
Viaggiare.
Now, the highlight of any tour to the Vatican is the Sistine Chapel. I'm just walking down the stairs into the entrance. There's no queue here. And inside, well, normally, people would be crammed in here, cheek by jowl. And now there are maybe a few dozen, maximum. Everybody wearing face masks. Everybody with plenty of space to enjoy Michelangelo's masterpiece, which is breathtaking. And there has been a worry in the past that cramming so many tourists in here has damaged the frescoes. Well, there's no fear of that now, because there's plenty of space. It's very peaceful and near silent and absolutely spectacular. Dieter Nels is here with his family from Germany. What has your experience been here in the Vatican today?
I was there 5 years ago, and I'm now here with my family, and it's perfect, because my experience from last time, it was completely crowded.
And we're standing here in the Sistine Chapel, and we have room to breathe.
Yeah, fantastic. And last time when we were here, it was completely crowded. You cannot move within the Sistina, but now it's fantastic.
Tourists from across Europe have been welcomed back here for a month. But Americans and other overseas visitors still aren't permitted. So for now, there is a moment where the riches of the Vatican are available to only a select few.
Quentin Somerville reporting from the Vatican. After an agonising wait, beauty salons in Britain will finally be allowed to welcome back customers from Monday. While many are looking forward to enjoying a manicure or pedicure after months of lockdown, not all treatments will be available. And that's led to accusations that the government's regulations are misogynistic. Our reporter, Kate Gregan, has been following the story.
Well, from Monday, a number of beauty services will be able to resume after months of lockdown. These include treatments like body massages, body waxing, and manicures and pedicures, of course. But any treatments that would normally be done on your face are still off bounds. So these are treatments like facials, eyebrow threading, and getting your eyelashes done. Really popular treatments. Now, these aren't allowed to be done because currently the face is considered a high-risk zone. But what's causing uproar is the fact that men are still allowed to have their beards trimmed. Now, naturally, this has caused a lot of anger, as many in the industry have been pointing out. If you're getting your eyebrows done, you can wear a mask. But if a man is getting his beard trimmed, he can't wear one. So many people in the beauty industry argue they have been unfairly targeted. One of those is Katie White. She runs a beauty studio called Relax in London.
We sit behind the client when we administer facials. I don't really know why these treatments have been singled out. And, you know, particularly the fact that beard trimming is allowed, it just really cements the message that men's needs come first.
So a really good point there. What's the government been saying in response?
Well, earlier the Prime Minister's spokesman denied that the government is being sexist. He said the government was being cautious and would relax restrictions based on the best scientific advice. Also earlier, the Culture Minister, Caroline Dynage, spoke to the BBC. Here's what she had to say about the restrictions.
Well, the guidance around beard trimming is actually quite tight. For instance, I'm not an expert in beards, but according to the guidance, beard services should only be provided where it can be done safely from the side and where you can avoid this high-risk zone.
Yeah, the point being, it is still allowed, isn't it?
Well, any kind of intricate detailing, outlining or shaving of beards shouldn't be carried out.
Meanwhile, there's a lot of criticism of the government that they're not taking this industry seriously enough. That's despite the fact that beauty is worth more than $35 billion to the UK economy and employs hundreds of thousands of people.
Kate Gregan. And that's all from us for now, but there will be an updated version of the Global News podcast later. If you want to comment on this podcast or the topics covered in it, you can send us an email. The address is globalpodcast@bbc.co.uk. I'm Janat Jalil. Until next time, goodbye.